There are not too many novelists who have an apple orchard out their back window. But Jane Hamilton does, because she lives on an apple farm that's been in her husband's family for generations. Jane is an award-winning writer. She's the author of The Book of Ruth, A Map of the World, and now she's got a new novel out called The Excellent Lombards. Now, this one is her most personal. It's a story of family inheritance and generational conflict set on an apple farm that's kind of like hers. On a recent spring morning, Steve Paulson set out to visit her there.
Jane Hamilton lives on a farm in the southeastern corner of Wisconsin. There are sheep and goats, lots of barn cats, and chickens right near the house.
So how many acres do you have here?
Let's see. I think it's about 260, and there's marsh and woodland. And so these are Ida Reds.
Jane and I are walking up a hill to an apple grove just past the farmhouse and an old, rather dilapidated barn. There's an ancient bathtub with claw feet sitting out in the middle of a sheep yard. It used to be in the house. This whole landscape of rolling hills is beautiful. A long time ago, a glacier stopped here and dumped its load of gravel. And the soil is perfect for these 17 acres of apples. Jane's husband, Bob Willard, is one of the partners who runs Ela Orchard. I've picked a windy day to visit.
This was an area that was settled in, 1848. My husband's ancestors came from New Hampshire and built a fanning mill company. And it has been reported that the old family house, which is in the village of Rochester, was a stop on the Underground Railroad. So it's rich in history.
Do you feel that? I mean, do you feel like you're somehow in touch with that history?
Yes. And the old house is still owned by the family, and there is a room in that house that has never been touched, and it's still the old parlor, and it's upstairs, and the horsehair sofas and the old portraits and newspapers from 1863 are still in bundles in that room. And it has a certain fragrance.
There is a lot of history around us. In the woods, Jane says, there's an old Indian marker tree that was bent into a dramatic S-curve to show the path. And there are also burial mounds on the property. The house where Jane and Bob live was built in 1860, though it now doesn't much resemble what the house used to look like.
When you go in the basement or even in the house, you can, again, this is about smell, you smell the... I won't call it mold. I'll call it the fragrance of the ages. But, you know, I'm the outlaw. I married into this family, so I have a certain anthropological bent in my feelings about the history.
And how did you end up here?
I went to Carleton College in Northfield, Minnesota with my husband's cousin. And after college, I was thinking that I would go to New York City to have a job in publishing, and I stopped here to visit my Carleton friend, and it was August, and there was apple picking, and they were actually short-handed at that moment, so I stayed for a couple of weeks to pick apples, and then I stayed forever.
Jane says she was lucky in so many ways, not just meeting her husband here, but also landing in a place where she could develop as a writer with no one looking over her shoulder, without worrying, as she says, about missing the party in the big city.
Hey, Bob!
We spot her husband, Bob, examining some of his trees with a paring knife in his hand. Last night, there was a late spring frost, which could prove disastrous for this year's crop of apples.
Can't tell for sure. It may be a bit mixed, where I do see some apples that were destroyed, but I see other ones that look like probably they'll be okay.
Was this just from one night of frost?
One night, yes, about 4 hours. Sunday morning, 2 a.m. to 6 a.m. was when temperatures got down to about 26. Usually we worry when temperatures are below 28, there can be damage at this stage. When the blossoms are out and just when the very first little apples are forming.
When Jane first moved to the farm, she was heavily involved in the apple business, but once she and Bob had children, she started cutting back. And then when her writing career took off, Jane phased out of day-to-day operations on the farm. But still, she has strong opinions about what makes a great apple.
We have a variety called the Canadian Melba that is early apple. It comes in August, and it's a relative of the Macintosh. It bruises when you look at it. It's very difficult to pick. It doesn't store well. It's the best apple on the planet. Nobody really knows it because they're not shipped.
Jane Hamilton's written 7 novels. Her first, The Book of Ruth, was picked for Oprah's book club, and a couple have been adapted for film or television. Her new novel, The Excellent Lombards, is set on an apple farm that sounds a lot like her own place. It's the story of 2 cousins and their families who run an orchard. Back at the house, we sit down at a huge table. We're in an old farmhouse kitchen that's been updated with modern appliances, and on one wall there's a giant mural painted by a friend. Ever since I read the new book, there's one question I've been dying to ask. Just how autobiographical is it?
So, Jane, this novel is about a lot of things. It's about a girl growing up, family relationships, running an apple orchard, and then the challenge of trying to hold on to a family farm when that's getting harder. How close to home are these issues for you?
Well, I had been thinking for a lot of years about the matters of succession because as one gets older, when you have a family business, and especially a farm, the matters that are so vexing with succession, so who gets to stay, who can't stay, who stays but isn't equipped to stay, who stays but for whatever reason there might be other forces that make that person feel that they don't truly belong. So all of those questions and vexations are things that I wanted to put into the body of my heroine, Mary Frances. And are they real life problems and situations and matters in my life as a farmer's wife? Yes.
How would you describe Mary Frances, or Frankie as she's called by a lot of people, the heroine, the narrator of your book?
She's a girl who's growing up in the 80s and 90s, and this is before cell phones, and so she's marvelously free. She ranges through the course of the novel from age 5 to 17. She is so in love with her family, her father, her brother, mother, not quite so much, but she'll take the mother. She is in love with the apple orchard where she lives. She's even in love with the tensions between her father and her father's business partner. She's kind of thrilled by that drama. She wants never to grow up. So I would say she's a little deranged by love for her family and the whole situation.
So why did you want to tell the story from her point of view?
Well, I guess I would say that the child is always a compelling narrator to live with. There's that tension in the child, especially a high-spirited girl like Mary Frances who feels powerful, but of course she's very vulnerable and she knows that. And also, it's always a pleasure to look through the eyes of a child. Mary Frances is especially wrong about a lot of things, but also right about a lot of things. I was told, actually, that I should tell the story from the mother's point of view, which is more closely aligned, you would say, from my point of view. And I really did not want to do that. Having a child look at the world made it more possible to really enter the fictional realm.
And then Mary Frances, she desperately wants to hang on to this life, to the family farm and all that. She can't imagine a future where she doesn't live there. Her older brother, William, had shared that vision maybe early on. He starts to drift away. It's kind of heartbreaking.
I think growing up is heartbreaking often. And also, you know, I like to think that there's still, in this day and age of remarkable plots that we're thrilled by when we watch TV series, there's still room for the simpler tale of a girl who is made sorrowful by the passage of time.
You raised 2 children on your farm, your apple orchard. They're grown now, but have either of them wanted to stay in the family business?
I have a 31-year-old son and a 29-year-old daughter, and they are off leading their lives and doing interesting things, but they're very attached to the farm, and they want somehow to work out their lives so that they can be part of it in some capacity. So, you know, I always had hoped for them that they could stay if they wanted to, and if they didn't want to, they wouldn't have to stay. But that is all to be revealed.
Which is very much the case in your novel, too. Who knows whether the kids can stay on? Who knows who will inherit the family farm?
That's true. And, you know, even if they do, the question for them of succession will come up sooner than they realize.
There's a passage that in your book that gets to the sense of family mission in a way. Sort of, you know, they're all in it together, and I'd love to have you read that.
The harvest was a wild living thing that you were trying to tame while all the while it was dragging you behind, arms out, flailing in the chase. But here was the miracle. Despite the chaos, the lack of planning, the bad feeling between Sherwood and my father, there was also an overriding unity of purpose, a reverence for the family history, a love for the soil within the property lines. Despite Sherwood's and Jim's temperamental differences, the apples grew. They were harvested, thousands of bushels a year. On the golden and blue afternoons, the driveway filled with customers, whole families piling out of cars to taste and to decide, to load up their trunk with bushels of apples and pears, with cider and honey, and knitting worsted from the sheep, and white packages of lamb chops and legs and shoulders. The Ukrainian women from the city liked the kidneys and tongues, and the Yugoslavs had to butcher the animals themselves in the back barn. There were plenty of people who felt, the minute they started down our long driveway, that they were returning to a bygone time. "Don't ever change a thing," they cried. "Don't fix that shed," they beseeched. "We love this orchard, you guys. It's real. It's special. It's..." They sometimes got teary. "Tracy, Lizzie, get in here once and take a whiff of the apple barn. Oh, Lord, the smell." Years before, those customers had come with their parents or their grandparents, and they were returning with their children. It was nature itself, nature at every level, that forced the Lombard operation to work.
Thank you. This is great.
Thank you, Steve. Do you have enough?
I do have enough, yeah.
You'll see for a little lunch.
Are you, you're not too rushed here?
No.
I'd love to.
Okay,
here.
That's Steve Paulson talking with Jane Hamilton at her family farm in Rochester, Wisconsin. Jane's new novel is called The Excellent Lombards. Thanks for listening today. I hope you heard something that mattered or that you'd like to share. Remember, there's always more in our podcast feed. You'll find us on iTunes or wherever else you download your favorite podcasts. To the best of our knowledge comes to you from Wisconsin Public Radio in Madison. Parth Shah produced this hour. He had help from Raymond Tungekar, Craig Ely, Doug Gordon, Charles Monroe Kane, and John Merfeld. Parth heads to NPR next for a Kroc Fellowship. We wish him all the luck in the world. Our theme music comes from Steve Mullen from Walk West Music. Kirill Owen is our technical director. Steve Paulson is our executive producer. And I'm Anne Strainchamps. We'll be back next week.